Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Sister Ann, are you on?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yes, ma'am. Welcome to the sixth edition of the Blog Talk Radio Show. Sister Ann?
Yes, sir.
You are our host for tonight, and we are happy to have you on. And so, we're excited. Many of us are excited about moving to a separate community where we or some of our loved ones have specific medical needs. This week, your task force, the Assisted Living Task Force, will discuss the new regulations for Medicare and Medicaid in the context of separation. So, Sister, you have a special guest for tonight, don't you?
Yes, I do. My special guest is to be Ms. Karen Lawrence. She's the community outreach person for the Southwest Georgia Project for Community Education.
And let me just say, if any of our guests, Sister Karen or anyone else, is dialed in right now, please press 1 so I can see that you are one of our guests for tonight. Please press 1. Okay, someone just pressed 1. That might be her now. Okay, we got some more people. Do you want to open their mics now, Sister Ann?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is this Sister Karen?
Yes, it is. Good evening. How are you?
Fine, Sister. How are you doing?
All is well. I'm doing wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for agreeing to come on the show and talk to us about changes and new regulations and updates in the Medicare and Medicaid program. The reason I thought it would be a good idea to have you on is we represent a group of people who are trying to establish communities all across the nation. And, of course,
right,
one of the things that we want to consider as one of our foremost projects is the living retirement home for our elderly. And I know a lot of those will probably be able to make use of information that you are going to bring to us. So what I'm going to do, I want to say before I let Karen begin, is that I met Karen, I don't know, I think it's been about 5 or 6 years now.
Yes, time ma'am, goes by about 5.
Yes, time goes by so fast. And when I first met Karen, she was doing the task of going around Southwest Georgia, finding women, farmers, growers, and producers, and did a fantastic job of finding women who were landowners, who were farming, had been farming, and were thinking about going back into growing food and food crops. So that's how I met Karen, and from that, we organized into smaller groups, and those groups of farmers are still meeting, and they came together, and now they're in trying to get another project off the ground. But it's all thanks to Karen Lawrence going around Southwest Georgia, beating the bushes and rounding up black farmers, producers, and landowners. So she has a vast array of things that she does in the community and has been a community advocate in the Southwest Georgia area for a long time. As a matter of fact, this is her own. You know, what I have found, and my husband and I have found, that in Southwest Georgia, a lot of the people, when they go to college, many of them went to Albany State, they didn't leave and go somewhere else. They stayed here, and they're contributors to the community. And I think that's a novelty in a lot in this place, not a lot of places. I don't know if other college towns are the same, but Albany has that. I see that as one of the things, because homecoming here for Albany State, oh, man. It is the premier event of the year. And Karen, that's her alma mater. So I'm going to let Karen take the floor now and tell us what it is that she is privy to that's going to happen with those programs.
All right. Thank you so much, Sister Ann. It's truly my pleasure to be here, and I thank you so much for asking. I just want to ask if Amber's chimed in yet. I don't hear a voice. So she was going to be my co-host tonight.
Sister Karen, if she, Sister Amber, if you're on, I can't tell. She has to press 1. So, Amber, if you're on, press 1, and I can see your line light up, and I can open the line for you. So when I see her line open up, I'll open her mic.
All right,
but I don't
that's
see her right
fine.
Now.
Don't worry. We're gonna go ahead because what we're gonna do tonight and talk about is something that's very important. And as Sister Ann said, I'm very passionate about Southwest Georgia, and my main goal is that people are educated about what is available to them when it comes to various services and programs. And really not understanding the Medicare expansion program. So once I received this information and I realized that Southwest Georgia was one of the areas that was left out of the Medicaid program under Obama, the Obama administration, because, you know, we're blue, and as a blue state, you know, we're not privy to a lot of things that we should be. I'm sorry, as a red state, excuse me. But our governor here in Georgia saw fit to not get this coverage for Georgians. And there are some 240 million Georgians, veterans, parents, and low-wage workers that are unaffected by the health, that were affected by the health care program and that are without health care services. And as we all know, Georgia is one of the most unhealthy, Southwest Georgia, unhealthy areas in the state of Georgia. We find that there are so many health disparities in our rural communities, and that is for lack of health care. So we recently received this grant to talk about Medicaid expansion and to explain to people in Southwest Georgia why it's important to get out and talk with our local representatives, because the one thing that our governor did prior to him leaving office this year was that he gave the responsibility of voting for Medicare expansion to our state representatives and our senators. So any new governor coming in will no longer have the power to say yes or no about Medicaid and Medicare for the state of Georgia. So we have to be ahead of the game. We have to be on our commissioners, our city councils, our city fathers, and the leaders of our state to actually work for the people here in Southwest Georgia. So we want to make sure that everyone in Southwest Georgia gets covered under the Medicaid expansion program. And the one thing we realize that Medicaid expansion under that program, we can get up to 170%. And 170% could really make a difference to healthcare in Georgia. So what can we do here in Georgia to make that happen? We can start calling, we can start emailing our state lawmakers today to let them know that we support the expansion for health care insurance coverage here in Georgia. Also understanding that last year, so many people were left behind, even though we had an opportunity for Obamacare or to get into the health care network. Everybody didn't understand how that worked, and they still don't understand how that works today. So we really have to start talking to people and educating people about what they can get, excuse me, and what's available. So we do have some options. We do have programs available. And there are alternatives for those people who don't have health care. So what we would like to see people doing right now is to find out who your local person is across Georgia. And right now, Sister Ann, what area are we talking with people or that we have people listening in?
It's really kind of hard to say. We have people from all over. Is that right, Brother Carlton?
Yes, ma'am. It's a national show. Anyone can listen nationally or even internationally over the internet.
Okay, and that's fine because, you know, all of the blue states were left out. So it affects all of us across this United States. And we have to make a conscious decision to get in touch with our lawmakers because we are in the midst of a voting season, year. So we have the power to talk with our lawmakers and to encourage them to work in our favor when it comes to health care. People don't understand. We have a lot of people, I mean young people here in this country, that are suffering because they don't have insurance. Either they can't afford it on their job or they don't understand how they qualify. And people who are in low-wage jobs, veterans, and retired people think that they can only get a certain amount But really, if your healthcare needs are overwhelming and more than what you can afford, you can also apply for Medicare. So if you have a great need, just say you have a heart condition and there are certain supplies that you need. And under disability with Medicaid, you're getting Medicare, but because of the need, you could get Medicaid. So it's no reason for anyone to be uninsured in this country because of lack of funding. If you're on disability with Medicare and your needs are greater than what Medicare can handle, you can get Medicaid. You can also qualify. Your children can qualify. Anybody under the age of 19 can qualify for Medicare, even if their parents can't. So are there any questions?
I did not know that if your Medicare did not cover all of your expenses, you could then apply for Medicaid. That is new information to me.
Yes, ma'am. And just an example, my son, who was disabled because of diabetes, he lost a limb and went blind. So his medical expenses rose above what disability was, you know, providing for him on Medicare. And we needed someone to sit with him while I worked and to help him. So I was concerned, and the medicines were so high. I didn't understand how I was going to be able to take care of everything on Medicare. Well, I found out through a council on aging here in Albany that he could apply for Medicaid, and he applied and he received it. And so I was able to buy all of the equipment he needed to buy his medicine. We didn't have to worry about, you know, prescriptions actually run what they call a spend down program under Medicare. You can only get so much before you have to wait a period of time before you can get back in. So people need to know this, that you can get both if one does not meet your needs.
Okay, well, that's great information because I was totally unaware. I used to work in social services, but I've been away from it for so long now that I don't keep up with all of the regulations. But when I was involved, it was either one or the other.
Yes,
now,
ma'am. And also we found out that, you know, in the past when a person was going into a nursing facility, you know, they had to relinquish all of their assets to the facility. Well, you don't have to do that anymore either.
Oh, really?
What they do now is, because when you look at it, some facilities that are operating, you know, there are a lot of private facilities. So just say if my mother goes into a nursing home, but her income, she just has her retirement, right? They will take her with just her retirement, and she would be given a certain percentage that what they call for her personal care. So just say you went into a nursing home, but you were retired, you have a pension, you also have land and property that you own that's in excess of $1 million, and you go into the same home that she's in, you're going to be, all of your assets are going to go into that home. It's not going to allow you to limit your amount that you're going to pay versus what the other person is paying.
I'm on a conference call.
Okay.
So it's not going to limit, you understand? So don't you, when you look at it, you just gave away a lot of money to this facility, and this other person is there, but they're still getting the same care. So they found out that, you know, that was, this wasn't fair for the person who had the $1 million versus the person who had $500,000.
Right.
So they've actually requiring people to now set a cost level for the nursing home. Because when you think about it, they were coming up everywhere. So Medicare, Medicaid was paying for people to go into these facilities, but there wasn't a balance within the facilities when it came to cost. So if I want to be able to take my mom to a particular place, they should be able to quote me a price for her to stay there. versus okay. taking all of her assets, taking the home, taking the land, her car. I mean, when you think about it, that's really not fair to the family, because whatever estate that person had now no longer belongs to the family anymore.
No, you are right. That is definitely not a fair practice.
No, ma'am. So they looked into it and people started to complain. So as of now, people don't have to relinquish their assets. They just have to do what is considered the financial payments. And their families are at liberty to either sell off the estates or live on it continuously, even though the mother and father may be in a nursing home. But we want people to really take into consideration the fact that healthcare is there and healthcare is affordable. And if there are people living in communities who don't get healthcare, there are facilities within the small communities or within a certain distance that will provide them health coverage at no cost or at a regulated cost.
Okay. Okay. Now, one thing I want to make sure people understand, when we talk about red states and blue states, now, is that the same as Democrat?
Republican and Democrat, yes.
Okay. So Georgia is a red state.
Right. We're a Republican state. Right.
Which is a Republican state.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is because we have more representatives from Georgia that are in the blue when it came down to our standing for our state, the number of the number of votes that we get from our
electoral
votes,
yeah,
electoral college, from the electoral college, we're represented more by Republicans than we are by Democrats.
Okay.
So the governor being a Republican, and do you know our governor actually turned down $333 billion because he said it would cost us $1.3 million. But he turned down $333 billion because it was going to cost us $1.3. So where's the logic in that? And we are an unhealthy state and people are without health care. So, you know, I mean, we have to really look at the leadership that we have and how they are leading our state and how they're leading the people of that state, and that they don't have a really genuine concern about the people within this state when it comes to health care.
Well, to me, it looks like all health care providers, doctors as well as facilities,
yes,
should be raising the alarm and protesting this, because they benefit from the people coming to them and hospitals and clinics,
right,
and so forth.
Right. Those hospitals that get state funding, they sure
right.
do. And, you know, we have right here in Albany, we have Phoebe Putnam Memorial Hospital that has a monopoly on the hospitals within a 30-mile radius of Albany. It really would behoove them to really get on board with this, because the more people that are coming and taking advantage of their healthcare facilities and their clinics, because there are clinics, there are healthcare centers that are scattered out throughout the region or the state, or in any state, you have healthcare facilities that are called federally qualified healthcare centers. And
right.
we need to take advantage of those.
Okay,
and you know, you can get dental care there, you can get prenatal care, you can get mental health care, and you can get prescription services in these particular centers.
So dental care is included now?
Yes, ma'am. You can get, actually it says, offers medical, prenatal, pediatric, dental, mental health, and pharmacy services are offered in these federal qualified health care centers. And these are all across the country. And if you would like to, you know, get information on how to connect with these facilities, you could go to www.gaphc, www.findhealthcare.org and check Find Healthcare. You also can go to www.charitablecarenetwork.com, and that's for anywhere in the country.
Okay. What we will do, we're going to post this on our website.
Okay, definitely.
Because next week what we will do is have a dialogue about the information that's being talked about tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
Right.
And
so
Yes, ma'am.
I just really wanted people to understand that Medicaid pays for medical care for children. And I want people to understand who are under the age of 19. Living with families with low income, with very low base income, on age family size. For most of our families in this country, and it says, and they have to be a U.S. citizen, is looking at who the government left behind when they did this. They left behind veterans, parents, and low-wage workers, and that is those people who are working at McDonald's or Burger King who are bringing home less than $5,000 a month. And I didn't even think that people lived off of $5,000 a month when it comes to taking care of a family.
Okay, is that $5,000 or
$500? I'm sorry, $5,000 a year.
A year.
When it comes to taking care of family. Please forgive me. In this day and time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
I remember, that's a lot, but I remember taking care of my family off of $9,000. And I said, you know, how do you take care of one in 2018 off of $5,000?
It is very, very, very difficult.
Yes, but then they look at a monthly income for a family of six people at $2,747. That is the minimal. And who's living off of that? So if you have one person in your family and your monthly income is $1,000 or less, you can qualify. But listen to me, it has to be an income, Sister Ann. It can't be just say a family, and I don't know how people survive when I talk to a lady and says she doesn't work. And I know I didn't want to pry into her life, and she didn't qualify for any insurance. And I was like, well, how are you living? But I realized people live with their family members.
Right.
And when you live with family members and you don't have a job, and you don't qualify, they don't understand if your family members could actually claim you on their income taxes, and then you can qualify for insurance.
As an adult, they can claim you?
Yes, ma'am. And that is why I wanted to talk to people about this, because I have learned so much about the system we live in when it comes to what people need to do to qualify. If you have a family member and they are an adult and they live in a house with you and they do not have a job, but they are a family member, don't have to be your son or your daughter, can be a cousin, could be an uncle, can be any relative, you can actually claim them on your income tax as a dependent. Thus, they can then apply for and receive health insurance.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why I know, Sister Ann. Last year, when they said that all people needed to be insured in the state, right?
Right.
If not, they were going to penalize people who worked in minimum wage jobs if you didn't get insurance and you had an option under Obamacare. I have a son that's 20. At that time, he was 25 years old, and I was supporting him. And do you know they don't even have to live in the house with you? But I was supporting him with over 50% of his income and needs. I claimed him on my taxes, and I was able to get insurance for him. It's just
okay.
That easy. But people have been being told no by their tax preparers that they could not claim their children. And in doing so, a lot of people have not been able to claim their children, but they take care of them. So I've told them to go back and file an amendment and an appeal to claim their children because the law gives them that option.
Okay. Up to what age?
There's no age limit because you can claim your grandmother or your father. There's no age limit if they're unemployed and they don't have to have a health disparity.
Okay. Okay. Well, that is great. And I will say here that you are a para, right?
Exactly.
I do what I call
supplementary taxes. Yes, ma'am. And helping those people who can't afford to pay for tax preparation. I help students and the elderly. Yes, ma'am.
All right.
And it's free. I do it for free.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's great information.
Yes, ma'am. Well, that's about what I have, Ms. Ann. And if there are any questions, but I appreciate the opportunity to provide the information that I have. And I hope I've said something that can help to make a difference for some people.
Very much so. And this will be in our archive so that when we talk about it, we have another conference call at 8 for people all over the country. And we will let them know
ma'am.
That this information is in our archive and they can go back
and
listen
it.
To it.
Oh, okay. And, well, I really appreciate that.
Yes, Dan,
I got a caller. I got a caller with a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum. It's a little loud in here. I'm trying to move over so you don't hear the noise in my background. Yes, assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay. Yes, I used to work actually for the New York State of Health over in New York. Well, obviously New York. And, you know, some people are discouraged when it comes to, you know, applying for the Medicaid and that because they're told, I used to work in the appeals department. So there's many different reasons why somebody can come up or that they don't qualify. And sometimes,
right.
depending on who the agent is, they may not look all the way through to see why not. They just tell you, you know, you don't qualify. But there's a few factors, you know. There might be some people who are separated. They might be married, not filing jointly, all type of different situations. But they don't tell you that if you don't ask. Like if you just
say,
it just says you don't qualify, then they just say, oh, maybe I don't qualify just because, you know. But you have to probe and find out exactly why. And then keep on asking why not.
Yes.
You know, even if you speak to one agent and they're not sure, because it's all about skill level too with that. Because all you do is have people on the computer figuring numbers out, you know, and if they're not as educated, you know, I did that for about 3.5 years, you know. So I'm sorry, you guys, this is a lot in my background, but I just wanted to let that, to bring that into the discussion, to let them
yes,
know to keep
ma'am.
Asking. Okay,
and
for them to get reasons why they don't qualify.
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, and that is why I try to encourage people as we do this work to make sure you don't take no for an answer. Always go an extra, you know, ask and so that you can get the services because people are going to say no because it's work, and a lot of times they don't
mm-hmm.
want to do
That's
the work.
Right.
And
That's
so
right.
if they don't want
That's
to do the
right.
work, they're not going to make the extra effort to tell you. You know, in our work, when I find out that an agent hasn't told a farmer something, and I go back and I talk to the agent and I ask them, I said, so I'm working with this farmer. Why haven't
mm-hmm.
You told them about so-and-so? They said, well, they never asked. And I said, well, you know,
mm-hmm.
isn't it your job, too, to offer them whatever services are available so that they can qualify for them? He said, well, they qualify, but, you know, if they don't ask, I don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. So
That's right.
I went to his superior because I felt like that is the reason that our farmers are suffering or people are suffering because the lack of knowledge that an agent who knows what is available refuses to give them the answer
yep.
or to tell them what
Absolutely.
Options they have. Yes, ma'am.
That's right.
I agree with
sometimes
you.
Sometimes they just don't know because they have such a high turnover rate. You know, people just get, you know how they're bored at their desk. They don't want to do the extra work, you know, whatever like that. But I also want to add something for us to not be discouraged by it, because sometimes we feel, we're told, right? I was just talking about that this morning. Watch them for a second. I was just talking to my father about it this morning. It's so funny because I was saying that the main people, in my experience, and I told you, I did this for 3.5 years. The main people that are on that, getting that assistance, are Jewish people. And they have about, I'm talking about 10 children. I mean, these people are making $200,000 a year. But they were calling back to back. Yes, they will find any kind of thing in any kind of niche, a glitch to get in there to get these assistants. And I say this to say this. A lot of times we're told by other people, oh, don't get that. Y'all don't want those programs. Be, you know, don't go do that. Don't do that. But these other people, oh, they're doing it, and they're getting stuff. They
right.
getting all
and
of these benefits.
They are in the majority. Yes, ma'am. Yes, they are.
Yes, and I saw that firsthand every day. I mean, I was doing at least 20 applications for them. But let me let y'all go because I got, you know, how the children get when you're on the phone. So,
all right, well, we'll
I got
to run. Thank you all so much.
Okay. Salaam alaikum.
Thank you, sister.
Dr. Ridley, looks like he's on the line.
Thank you.
So I go, I'm going to go ahead and open Dr. Ridley's line. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridley.
You know, Assalamu alaikum, can you hear me? First of all, I would like to thank that sister who called in just now with all that noise in the background. Why I'm saying that is that, you know, we as black people have a lot of things that are going on in our lives at one time. And sometimes we don't do other things because of those. Just like you were saying, how those Jewish people, they don't have a
got some you got some feedback in your line, Dr. Viz. You might be too close to Sister Ann.
Okay. Okay, how's that?
That's better. Actually, it's not better. We can't hear you. Can't hear you, Doc. Dr. Ridley?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me
yes,
now?
Yes, sir. Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. Two things. One thing, a lot of times black people have a stigma about getting any type of services because they call us welfare bums and, you know, all type of names. And so we don't apply for benefits like disability. We try to do everything by the book. And don't even know the book, don't know the playbook. And white people and Jewish people know the playbook, and they're getting all this government assistance, and we are here suffering. That's one thing. The other thing is, well, three things. Number two, there's a stigma on coming to the South. People up North think that everybody down South is you know, don't even have indoor bathrooms and stuff. No health facilities, you know, so they think that people are really suffering down here. Well, people are suffering here as they're suffering in the big cities, but if you got some sense, you can figure your way through the maze and be able to survive and get services and well as get other things you need done. Now, the third thing, I know that farmers were not a part of the Social Security system. How does that work now, Karen? How do farmers apply for, can they get Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid? How does that work for farmers who don't
yes,
have
they
jobs?
Yes, they can. Okay, those the same way, if they're disabled or they come to a place where they're sick, they can actually apply for Medicare. Because of okay. disability, you don't have to have had a job in order to receive disability. But because
okay.
we have some farmers who have had some income or have worked at some point in time, but had limited income, they can still apply for and get Medicare, as well as if they don't have enough, they can get Medicaid. And that's what they're trying to push for the elderly and for farmers underneath the Medicaid program, is that the lack of income does not filter into this now when they were trying to get a healthy America so that we can cut down on some of the expenses that the government pays in when it comes to health care.
Okay. I know this is one of the a lot of white farmers out here, I know, get jobs just to be able to get, Social Security, just to get insurance,
yes,
et cetera, since it wasn't provided for farmers in the past. But you said that's changed now?
Right. It's changing because when we first started the Medicaid expansion program, the main people they wanted us to talk to were farmers and elderly people, to find out where they were when it came to health care. And if they didn't have any services, that we were going to work with them to try to get them the services that they needed. So I'm going around the region talking with people across 14 counties to encourage people, to encourage their family members to reach out to the healthcare system and to start talking with local government about what can be done around Medicaid expansion, because if they lift it to the point of 170%, just think how that could help people when it comes to having to have personal care. You wouldn't come out your pocket for anything.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Karen.
Well, I appreciate you all having me. And, anytime I can be of service or help when it comes to educating about these different services, I definitely, as I learn more, I'll be definitely contacting Sister Ann to see how we can provide more information on what's the next phase of this as we move through this year, because it won't be voted on this year. It won't be until next year. So with us in an election year, we're going to look at voter registration and what we can do on that end.
Right.
So thank you all so much.
Thank you, Karen. And what I would like to say in the meantime, I know one of the things that was so successful years ago when I was working in the civil rights movement, when we were trying to get legislators to do things, we would have a write-in campaign. You would have one letter that you would have everybody to get a copy of and sign and just flood
their office.
Elected officials' office with it. And we did phone calls. Everybody would have a targeted day where you just gonna be calling all day long on the same issue.
Yes, ma'am.
And they'll move. They'll do something. And
right,
I think
and that's what we want to do. We want to start a movement.
Right, and I think what's happening with young people all over the country now, they're just waiting to turn 17 and a half. So
yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
They can have a voice. So, yeah, I think it's going to be some changes coming as far as that is concerned. So just keep in touch and let us know what we can do to assist along that line.
Yes, ma'am, I will do. You all have a blessed one, and thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Okay, Brother Carlton, is there anyone else waiting to have a comment?
Callers, listeners, if you're listening to the show right now and your interest is piqued, please press that number one so that we know that you have a question or a comment. Press number one on your keypad and we'll open your mic.
People may say, well, what does Medicare and Medicaid have to do with separation? We like to go all or nothing and wind up doing nothing. We're here, and we can get the system to help us if we know how to do it. Now, we need to have facilities for our elderly. But white folks get money from the government to help the funding of the facilities for the elderly. They give them added stipends so they can afford to stay in an assisted living home. But if people don't know, and particularly, you know, a lot of the people in the nation, some of them never worked in the system. You know, they're always independent business people. So, but now that they're going towards retirement and they need some help, there may be some things that we can do to get them to be qualified so they can get some help. And so it shouldn't be stigmatized. It's like here at the farm, that's how they play you. We were getting government money as a farm because all farmers got it. It was like all you had to do was sign up for it, and then you got some money based on the acreage of cropland you have. Well, did an article and said that the members of Farrakhan was milking the government. Then Glenn Beck came and he did an article talking about that Ben Farrakhan was milking the government. So we gave the money back because we didn't want that stigma on the minister, on the nation. But it was only $41,000. Okay? Whereas farmers in this county, millions of dollars. Okay? We had some farmers over a 14-year period, he got $6 million. Then we had 100 farmers who got $500,000 and 50 farmers who got $1 million, all in a 14-year period. But it made us look like we were stealing something by getting the same benefits that the white farmers were getting. The same thing the black farmers went to court over trying to get the proper services they deserve. White farmers got it, they didn't. But even when you go to get it, here comes the news and the media. They'll stigmatize you for milking the government. Same way with people who may need some financial assistance, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps. Well, you stigmatize as a black person. Whereas, like that sister pointed out, Jewish people who are making $200,000 a year be ripping the government. Here you are making $10,000 a year, and you ashamed to get some assistance. So I hope people are listening. We ain't saying that we're going to stay here forever. We're trying to get out. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad even said that they need to pay us for 25 years. The government needs to pay us until we get established. 25 years of reparations when we get after they give us the territory, then they should foot the bill for 25 years. Now, some people say, well, why, you know, they ain't going to do that. Why are you going to ask for that? Because they stole it from us. You're just getting back what they stole from us, only a portion of it. It's only right that they pay. So whatever services as a black person that you can get, because you put that money into it, and so did your parents and grandparents, get it. Don't be stigmatized by it. Don't take no for an answer.
Yes, sir. Dr. Ridgely, yes. We got some callers with questions. Can I bring them on?
Please do.
Okay, caller with the last four digits, 6509. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Michael X. I'm calling from Peekskill, New York. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, Islam, you got a question?
Yes, a comment and a question. I'm a veteran, a disabled veteran, so I agree with you, you know, get what I can get. I've been blessed to have full veterans benefits and Social Security, medical from the veterans, and Medicare. I'm contemplating moving south. Time to leave. It's definitely time to leave. And so I'm making a plan for that. And I totally agree with you, Dr. Ridgely, right?
Yes, sir.
That get whatever I can get, because I and my ancestors paid for whatever I get today from this government. And, you know, they won't give me reparations for whatever happened. So I'm taking whatever I can to improve my life and help other people, because I'm not selfish about when I get my things. I help other people. But I'm definitely contemplating. I've signed up with the Time to Leave program, and I'm making my plans. And I say within 3 to 5 years, maybe I'll buy some land down south, or however the process somebody has guided me through. Allah bless me to get some land and build a house, have a farm. You know, as I'm 56 now, and I'm in relatively good health. I like to spend my whatever time I have left, let me put it that way, somewhere else other than New York. You know, the migration from the South to the North years ago, time for me to go back to the South. And that's all I have to say. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Well, all we can say is all praise due to Allah, brother. Thank you. And I pray Allah you be successful with your plans and your move. And I like your spirit that you're going to plan this move. You're not just emotional. You see the benefit, and now you're making the plans. And this is what we're trying to do. We got to, I think next week, Brother Carlton, are you all going to have, be talking about the manual, right?
Not next week, the week after. Next week we're going to have a discussion over this. Yes, sir.
Yeah, discussion.
Yeah, discussion next week, but the week after that, we're going to be discussing the manual.
Yes, so the manual for the physical relocation, Time to Leave.
Yes.
And we have another caller.
First of all, they can check that manual on timetoleave.us on the website. They can order that manual. Okay?
Absolutely. Okay, so caller with the last 4 digits, 052, state your name and where you're calling from.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Brother Leroy Shabazz. I'm calling from Cincinnati, Ohio. Again, I say assalamu alaikum to everyone that's listening. I do have a profile, Brother Leroy Shabazz, on the Time to Leave site. My first question is, Dr. Wrigley, is not personal, but Dr. Wrigley, I did kind of hit you in the inbox through Facebook in reference to a question I have, and I just have having you to look at something concerning some raising funds for the farm process. My thing is disaster preparedness. I'm a CERT program coordinator here in Cincinnati, and the most successful thing that I've done is after the minister told us in 2010 to make sure that what happened in Katrina never happens to our people again. A lot of us stand up and got into disaster preparedness. And I got involved with this CERT program, and I'll just, as a real caveat, say that that the CERT program came up. The whole program was created 2 days after the minister's vision, after that earthquake took place in Mexico. So the CERT program came out of a great earthquake that took place. And in our lessons, we understand who makes rain, hail, snow, and earthquake, and we also should understand about consequences, about cause and effect. My point, and I'm come through, is that I would ask Dr. Wrigley, as well as anyone else, because I am a registered Muslim, to go to my website and look at, if you go to the website, cert5.com, cert5.com, and at the About Us page, there's a link that goes to a donation fund that I created. And I sent this to the minister in 2015 in a 15-page report called the Lamb's Blood Disaster Fund. And so that's what I want you to take a look at, Dr. Wrigley, because if we implement this fund, we can produce money for the farmers, as well as create an infrastructure that would allow these different organizations within the city to access the farm produce, as well as to prepare for some of the disasters that are about to happen.
Okay, brother, we'll check you out.
Thank you, sir.
I don't respond to the messages in the inbox on Facebook. So it wasn't personal. I just don't even look at that anymore. Okay.
I'm glad I really didn't take that personal, brother. Cause, and I'll say this, brother, that we are going to be successful. I know you get kind of frustrated, Dr. Rigby, on Facebook. I can see your frustration a lot of times. But we are going to be successful, brother. There is no doubt about it. We are going to be successful. And I would say to you, Dr. Rigby, as I conclude my point, is that I hope you're ready for all the stuff, all the farms you're going to have to manage and stuff in the next year or so when these things start happening and people start entering in droves.
Well, all praise due to Allah when that happens. But in the meantime, somebody's got to keep the foot up the butt. That's what I do.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, and when I deal with disaster preparedness, it's a constant battle, too. One of the highlights of what I did as a 13 program coordinator was I had the Cincinnati Fire Department Homeland Security Branch and the Hamilton County Emergency Management Agency here to give us permission, our 13 permission, to meet at a certain location and to help coordinate disaster preparedness for the Black community. A year later, and I don't think that had anything to do with the Trump administration, they called me back to the regional headquarters and said, Brother Leroy, we're not even sponsoring CERT anymore. So whereas we were actually able to coordinate along with this system that's in existence for when all these disasters start happening, we have to fight to get back to the ground that we had taken. So it's a battle for all of us, brothers. And I'm glad to hear all the other presenters on this program and this process. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. And, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people doing things out there that are in the dark right now that people don't know about. And I know it's going on, but my job is to keep kicking and fighting and spitting to get everybody moving. I don't make no assumptions. When I see it happening, then it's happening. Until then, I'm going to be kicking and striping and fighting and keeping that foot up their butt to make people move. But thank you so much. Anybody else, Brother Calder?
No, sir. Nobody else in the queue. And we're down to the last 90 seconds of the show.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, the sister we had on, you know, Sister Karen, you see what one person can do. Who is concerned about people? There's a lot that people can do to help people in different situations. It's a shame for people to be bored when there's so much that needs to be done. Go out and help somebody. You see things are not in place. Well, put it in place. Find out what you can do to help somebody, to help things. You know. If we was living in the laps of luxury with no cares and nobody else had any cares, then being bored could be an option. But with so many things that needs to be done, there's no reason to be bored. As Mr. Farrakhan said, make your communities a decent and safe place to live. And if we stay here and the time to be a little bit, move to a community that you can control, or control the community that you're living in. So wherever you're at, you better learn how to control it. If you're in a community, see how to control it. If you can't control it, then pass it on to people who want to go to the community. Control that community. Do not stay in hell. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Carlson.
Well, alaikum salam. Thank you, Sister Ann.
my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peace Street. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes.
Now I